Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, while together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
So good morning. So I want to start with telling you two things. One, I know that some of you are here against your will. You said the World Cup starts at 12. The coverage starts at 12. And it's 11:15 when this thing starts. And somebody said something spiritual to you like, the World Cup is for a day, God is for a lifetime. And so you had to come. So I want to know, I'm sensitive to that. And I will not be hurt if I see a little glow in front of you that is kind of getting on your little device. Actually, I'll be a little hurt, but I understand. And now and then, we just might need a report. But in truth, the game doesn't start until 2. Coverage is early, so just relax if you're here. The other thing I wanted to tell you is just kind of a self-disclosure. I woke up early this morning because I like to kind of get up early on the day that I speak and go to my office and be quiet. And I thought, I'll just wear a white shirt and some khakis. And when I got to my office and I went to the bathroom and looked in the mirror, I thought, I look like a doctor. So anyway, just get that out of the way so you don't whisper to, he looks like a doctor. Or you could tell people later on, gosh, it was so great we had a doctor speak to us. So this morning I have a question for you. I want to know how many of you consider yourselves to be a good storyteller. Let me see your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4. I bet we have about 10. Now, if I do my job right, by the end of this time, you will all raise your hands. And that is a big task. So, here we go. I want to begin this morning by getting you to listen to a brief piece of music. I will apologize beforehand of the sound quality because I only had this piece of music on a cassette. For many of you who don't know what that is, it was an archaic thing that was used many years ago where they had little spools that went around. Anyway, and they've transferred it to something else. So I want you to listen to this piece of music. We're going to pause it, and I'm going to ask you a few questions, okay? So just listen to this music. Pretend like you're riding along in your car. This music comes on, and you listen, okay? So when that begins to play, be honest with me, my feelings aren't going to be hurt. I have no investment in this. When that begins to play, you have a choice to listen to more or to kind of punch a button and find another channel. How many of you are going to find another channel? Yeah, good number of you. Now, scale of 1 to 10. 10, oh my gosh. I got to find out who this is, and I'm going to go out and get a CD today or download it right now. One being, interesting enough, whatever. How many of you kind of are below a 5? Yeah, a good number of people are below a 5. How many of you are at a 10? 1, 2, okay. We're all over the map, but we got a lot of down there. So I want to tell you a story. About 50 years ago, there was a man, young man named Leon Fleischer. And had you known classical music at that time, you would know that Leon Fleischer was the next big thing in classical music. Everybody knew this young virtuoso was a rising star, and you knew that he would be a household name in the world of classical music and probably beyond. His star was going up. He was famous and getting more famous. One day he woke up and there was a tingling in his hand. And he wasn't sure what it was, thought maybe he slept on it. But the tingling got worse and then it began to feel numb. And at the end of the week, he could hardly move his hand and he lost the functional use of his right hand. Now think about it for a moment. Whatever you do, whatever goes on in you, your greatest gift, what if you lose the thing that allows you to do what you love best? You're a singer, your voice is gone. You speak on the phone to people in customer service, you can't hear. You're a physical trainer and you can't walk. And on and on and on. Your counselor, your voice stops working. Imagine what would happen if you lost the thing you needed to give your gift to the world. I don't know what would happen to you, but I know what would happen to me, and it's what happened to Leon Fleischer. He began to spiral down in a suicidal depression. Of course he would. And he began to get help. No doctors could figure it out. No psychologist could figure out what was wrong with his hand. He went to specialist after specialist after specialist, and they finally said, there's nothing we can do. And after a while, after some counseling, after keeping himself safe and others kept him safe, he began to move on. He began to compose music. He began to conduct music and teach classes. And he developed an unusual skill. He could play the piano with his left hand alone. So I want you to listen to the rest of this little piece of music. I heard it on an NPR interview where Leon Fleischer in his 70s was telling his story to the interviewer. And in the interviewer said, well, we have a Steinway over here. Would you play for us, Mr. Fleischer? And he said, of course, I'd love to. And he sits down at the piano at 70 years old with one hand, and plays this music. It was the music you heard at the beginning, but listen to the rest of it. Leon Fleischer playing with one hand. Want to go buy something by Leon Fleischer? Yeah. Anybody rated a one or a two? What did you feel when you listened to that second bit of music? I looked into your eyes. A lot of you are going, and some of your eyes were closed. What did you feel? It's the same piece of music that many of you were indifferent to just a few minutes ago. The same composer, the same player, the same song. What's the difference? The difference is the story. When you know the story, you lean in. When you know the story, everything changes, doesn't it? When you know the story, you connect. You know, I believe this is often how we treat people. We'll meet them in the store. Maybe they work the cashier. Maybe they pass us on the street. Maybe they pass us in church. And we meet them and we go, they're okay. I'd give them a one or a two. We wouldn't say that. Or a three, maybe a six. But I'm not going to really engage. But if you knew their story, you would lean in. If you knew the story, you would engage, because that makes all the difference. And so that's what we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about a person and his or her story. I want to begin this morning with another little group exercise, because it seems like we're warmed up into that. We're going to watch the first few minutes of a movie together. I want you to imagine to yourself that you're in the theater, the lights have gone down, and the movie begins. And I want you to watch this clip. It's what comes on right when the lights go down. And I want to take note of what you feel, and I want you to take note of what you think the director wanted you to feel and think as you watch this first clip. So can we do it?
Frankie do?
Oh, Frankie was tremendous.
He's a good boy. Are you hungry?
Are you sure?
Good. I won't give you too much. Very nice. There.
Okay, Frankie. Bless us, O Lord, for these thy gifts, which of thy bounty we are about to receive.
Okay, the movie's begun. You've watched the first 3 minutes. What did the director want you to feel and experience in that very first scene? Just give me some words or some adjectives. Don't be shy.
Family love.
Family love. What else? What did you feel? What did you sense?
Simple life.
Father delighting in his son. Son delighting in his father. It was wonderful, wasn't it? Just idyllic. just idyllic. I want to put a circle around this, and I want to call this scene a picture of innocence, wasn't it? Now, if you have seen this movie, don't talk. If you haven't, I want you to be the script writer, and I want you to tell me, what are you going to write next in this script? What happens next? I'm not looking for the right answer. I'm looking for your answer. What happens next? Somebody. Come on.
Conflict.
What else?
Tragedy.
What else? And you can be specific. You want, here's what happens next. Dad dies. What else? What else? Well, first of all, I want to go, what are y'all, a bunch of cynics? Do you realize that nobody said they had dessert? Nobody. And that didn't come to anybody's mind. Maybe they had some pie, chocolate pie with ice cream. And nobody said they tucked him in bed, read him a story, got up and had porridge. Nobody said that. Why didn't you say that?
That's boring.
That's true. Why didn't you say that? Because that's not what happens in stories. Because what happens next is tragedy. Tragedy always happens. It just does. Doggone it. It just does. And in this movie, it did. The door burst open, some bad guys come in with a gun, and pow, there goes Dad. Awful. Well, I'm sorry, I just blew the movie. She said, I haven't seen this yet. I have this thing about ruining music. But I'll leave the end to it, yeah. They shoot the dog in the end. No, it's okay. No, they don't. And the camera goes into the little boy's eyes and comes back out, and he's 20. Now, we're just at minute number 3 of the movie. In general terms, or you can be specific, you screenwriters, you, what happens next? Huh?
Revenge,
yes. So that means somebody's going to start doing something. Yeah, what else?
The boy becomes an IRA.
The boy becomes an IRA member. There you go. So what happens next is, when there's a tragedy, people figure out what they're going to do with this tragedy. They contend. So from minute number 3 up until almost the end, it's people contending with what happened in minute number 3. Okay? So we have innocence, we have tragedy, we have people contending with that tragedy, which is the body of the movie. And then what happens? What happens? We got a few more minutes left. There's resolution. There's resolve. Now, most of you have not seen this movie. How did you know that these are the elements of a story? How did you know? It's your story. It's a story you live. A lot of times people think, well, it's because of Hollywood. No, Hollywood stole this. It's not theirs. You know that that's how a story goes because that's how your story goes. But also, even bigger than that, this is the way God shaped the world. Think about it. The first few minutes of the movie, Genesis 1 and 2. Everything is good. Everything is beautiful. Everything works. It's pure innocence. A garden, people, love, a perfect place. The first 3 minutes of the movie. And after that first 3 minutes of the movie, or that first 3 chapters of Genesis, comes Genesis 3. A snake enters the garden and messes things up. A snake bursts in the door on that family and messes things up. Tragedy always enters. And then we get Genesis 3 all the way up to Revelation. And what is that? People contending with what to do with what happened in Genesis 3. The Old Testament, the coming of Christ, the young church. We're trying to figure out what to do with Genesis 3, the tragedy. And if we hang on long enough, and even if we don't, and if we believe, we know there's going to be resolve, revelation, a new garden, a new beginning where we live the rest of our lives. That's the way God shaped this world. That's the way God shaped you, with a story built for redemption. Now, I know some of you, but I do not know many of you. But I know this. Your story has this shape. You started out and someone held you and looked into your eyes and fed you and loved you. It was innocent. It was beautiful. It was lovely. And I also know this about you, that sometime in your young life, often your very young life, but sometime, a snake entered the garden and hurt you very badly, because no one lives in this world without that happening. That's the way it goes. And after that, you tried to figure out on your own, and maybe with the help of other people's, what to do with what happened in that garden of yours. And you did well sometimes, and you didn't do well other times, and it hurt, and you began spinning your wheels. And frankly, that's the time people often go to counseling, because they go, it's not working. This thing I'm doing is not working. I'm not getting traction. I'm not moving ahead where I want to move, because I want to move ahead toward resolution. And so people contend. People contend. And I know you're heading toward resolve. Whether you know it or not, you're heading toward resolve. You were born to tell a story, to live a story, a grand and glorious narrative that was written before time. And if we were to put a title to that novel, a title to that story that is yours, the title would be something like this: There is hope. That's your narrative. We are all storytellers, but usually not without, not with words. You tell a story at the breakfast table. You tell it when you go to the coffee shop. You tell it to the waitress or waiter. You tell it to your coworkers. You tell it to the people on the street who ask you for a dollar. You tell it to your neighbors. You tell it in traffic. You tell it in the line at the post office. You're always telling stories. Always. What I mean by that, what I mean is that the way you carry yourself, your interactions with others, your character, you're always telling me a story. And that story is impacted by the story of your life and the story of your response to the gospel. Let me give you a few examples of how people tell stories. I was getting on an airplane one time, and there was this older couple that was assigned to a middle and a window seat, and their row had this businesswoman sitting on the edge, on the aisle seat. And I was already sitting down, and I watched them say, those are our seats. And she kind of did like this, and then got up and let them in. And they sat down. Well, after they sat down, and while people were gathering on, somebody who was sitting near the window in her aisle needed to get something out of the overhead bin because they wanted to get a book. So they said, excuse me, could I get up and get my book out of the overhead bin? And she said, really? And And then while we're in flight, guess who needed to go to the bathroom? And she did it again. She went, it was awful. I almost said, get a grip, lady. No, but I didn't. I was just let them do it. And then while we several times, I think somebody was coming by with drinks, and she said, what do you mean you don't have apple juice? And I overheard her saying something like, these seats are really uncomfortable. Now, she's telling a story, and it has a title. And I think it's something like this: I am not pleased with this world. Or maybe, I'm entitled to better than this. A little closer to home. Every morning, I go to the downtown Franklin Starbucks, and I only get a small coffee, that's all, because I don't want to spend $30 on something else. Just a small coffee. I will not call it a tall coffee, because that's a marketing trick, and I'm not tricked, it's small. So I said, huh? No, it's small. Oh, he has a Starbucks shirt on, I love it. Yes, it's tall, and I think it's a brilliant idea to call it tall. Okay, let me tell you something else I did at Starbucks. You're going to love this. So I go in there, and there are these little scones called a petite vanilla scone, right? You know those. And I went in, and I said to the people, look, I love those scones. I love those scones. And I'm a regular, and I will buy those scones. But I'm a guy, and I can't say I'd like a tall coffee and a petite vanilla scone. And so I said, will you bear with me here? You can know me and don't think I'm weird, but I'm going to come in and I'm going to say, I would like a tall coffee and I would like a micro sports scone. And they do it and they humor me and I buy lots of them. That has nothing to do with what I was going to say, but just need to let you in on a little thing here. So anyway. So I am heading into the door, and over, like the door is here, I'm over there, and a sweet grandmother and her three little grandchildren are walking along the street, all holding hands, coming toward the same door. And I sped up so I could beat them, because I know how long grandmothers and three or four little grandchildren will take in line. Because I want this, no, I want that. Which one do you want? I want that. And I was like, I'm in a hurry. So I was speeding up. Y'all, I sped up to beat a grandmother. I did that, and I'm so embarrassed, but we need to be honest here. I sped up to beat a grandmother and her little bitty kids, grandkids. Fortunately, on the way to the door, I think God went, really? And for once I heard that. And I decided that I would open the door and let them in and wait extremely impatiently for them to get through. At that moment, though, the title of my story was something like this before I opened the door. My time is more important than yours. Or it might have been titled, Granny, Back Off. I got things to do. Neither of which are very noble stories. One more story. I have a friend who works as a waitress, and as far as she knows, she's the only believer who works there. And she tells me this is what happens. It seems there's someone there that has a bit of notoriety, and they're a professing believer. And here's what happens. She says all the people in the restaurant hate it when he comes. Here's the conversation they had, and he has often. I'd like the chicken, and I'd like rice and some beans, and I'd like asparagus. I'm sorry, we don't have asparagus. I would like asparagus. But I'm sorry, we don't have asparagus, but we have some other things, and she gave the other options. He said, I don't think you heard me. I would like asparagus. And she said, yes, sir. And for some reason, she or the manager or someone else went out to the grocery store, got some asparagus, cooked it for him, brought it to him, and he left without a tip. What story did he tell? You should be intimidated by me. I am not only more important than you, but there is no other God but me. My pleasure is your highest goal. That's the story he told. How we live tells a story. The story we tell consistently reveals our character. Jesus says in John, they will know that you are my disciples by your love for one another. To me, that means the quality of your love, the quality of your life, how well we love others, tells the story of whether or not you love Jesus, tells the world that there's a Savior, tells the world that there is hope. And if I'm trying to beat a grandmother to the coffee shop, I am not telling a good story. In fact, I can go further than that. The unbelieving world is given the right to judge whether or not you and I believe based, or whether or not there is a God based on the visible love that we have for people. No pressure. No pressure. Another way to say it is this: the way you live tells a story that people read. If you love, if your character is one that promotes love, you tell the story of redemption. But there's something else involved here. The story of your life influences the story you tell. And there are certain chapters in your story that have shaped you. Let me give you an example. A number of years ago, I was leading a men's retreat where a group of 10 men came up for a long weekend, actually a whole week, to deal with some serious issues in their life. And it was just a dig-in retreat. And you know how at the beginning of retreats, you're sitting around in a circle and you kind of do the self-introductions. Hi, I'm Al. I live in Franklin. I'm married. I have two sons and we have a dog. And I like to do this. And my favorite color is blue or whatever. And then everybody goes around. And several people did that. And the third guy, I'm just going to name him John. And if you're John, it's not you. And he goes, hi, my name's John. Literally, this is what he said. You wouldn't want to be my friend, my neighbor, my wife. I am an angry, rageful man. I have guns at home and I dare someone to break in on me. I'd love it, in fact. I like to fight. That's why I signed up to be a paratrooper. And that's why I work in a prison, because I get to break up fights. I feel like a volcano that's getting ready to explode at any minute. And then he turned to the guy next to him who was going to be his roommate for the week. And that guy looked like a deer in the headlights. And I thought he was going to say, hi, my name's Bob, and I'm going to die, or something. So there you are. You're in the group. And he says this. What do you feel at that moment? What do you feel?
Fear.
Fear. I'm terrified. And everybody was like, oh my gosh. We were terrified. And his story was titled, Be Afraid of Me. Or Stay Away. Now, let's look at our outline. And on this outline, where was he? What do you know about him? You know that someone held him, and he was dear and sweet and cute. And you know that something happened. You don't know what. And you know that he's contending. Where is he right now? He's contending. And he's not doing a good job of it. But he's contending the only way he knows to keep from feeling or to keep from whatever happening from happening again. Does that make sense? That's where he is. And in my mind, I'm going, okay, here we are. And he's contending. and he's doing a masterful job of keeping safe. So then we have dinner together that night, which was a little awkward. But we're sitting around the table. I make sure he doesn't have a knife in his chair. And there are two guys who gave up their vacations, a week vacation, to come just to cook for these gentlemen. It's amazing. And they put out this great spread. And we were talking and relaxing a little bit more. And when he's finished, he picked up his plate and walked into the kitchen. And I thought, oh no. And here's what I heard him say. Guys, this was an amazing meal. I can't believe that you gave up your vacations to come here. Thank you very much. And when I heard that, I felt like a hound on a scent. Because I was saying, you know what I saw right there? Innocence. I saw beauty. I saw love. I saw kindness. And I knew, because I know how a story is shaped, that it's in there somewhere. It's in there. So the next morning, we came together for our group where people tell stories and tell their stories about their life shaped like this. And I don't know why I said this, but we're sitting in the group and people are looking to me as the leader. And I said, so John, why don't you go first this morning? Because as far as I can tell, you're the biggest fake in the group. Everybody kind of went like this. Except for John. And then I said it and went, oh no. I should not have said this. Because he was a really big guy. And he said, excuse me? What did you say? I said, well, why don't you go first because you're the biggest fake in the group? And he said, did you say fake? And I said, yes. I mean, yes. And then I said, but I could use another word, liar, if that would help. And he said, you got to tell me what you mean. And then I thought, well, thank you, God, he does not have a gun. And I said, well, yesterday, when we went around our little circle, you did a masterful job. It was amazing of scaring all of us to death. When you finished your little introduction, we were shaking in our boots because we didn't know what you were going to do to us this week. And we assumed that it would not be good. You said, stay away from me, and I really want to, because I'm afraid of you. But you blew it. He said, what do you mean? You blew it. You picked up your plate, and you went into the kitchen, and you were kind. You were gracious. You showed gratitude. So which one of those are you? Are you the mean man that wants to destroy? Are you the kind man who wants to bless? Take a pick. I think you've picked the wrong one. And he was quiet. He was really quiet. And I said, so tell us your story. Tell us your story. And he said, when I was a little boy, 5 and 6 years old, I was the most fun kid you've ever seen. I loved, I was generous, I loved life. When I went to the first grade, and it was a long time ago, we went down the hall in a little row to lunch, and I noticed that there was this guy, a custodian, that was in his closet, and he was all by himself, and we all got to eat together, so I thought that I would ask Mom if she would make some cookies, and I would give them to him. So every day, I'd get some extra cookies, and I'd just pop them in the door and give them to him. And one day, I got her to make a sandwich, and she made a sandwich. And I took it to him. He invited me in, and he shut the door, and he did some very, very horrible things to me. Very, very violent things to me. Snake entered the garden. And from that day on, he committed that no one was going to hurt me again. No one. And it worked. It worked. So I said to him, "You are an exceedingly kind man. And it's time for you to live that." I wish you could have seen what happened next. The rumble started with his feet and moved up his body to his chest, and he began to heave sobs. And out of it, he choked out the words, "I am a kind man. I am a kind man." And during that week, he worked on the tragedy that happened. And he worked on what was more true. And at the end of the week, he read us this poem. And it was the most stunningly beautiful poem about a feather that fell from the sky out in the woods. And he told how he was a different man. And he read us the letter that he read was going to send to the warden quitting his job at the prison because it wasn't a place for him. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Stories can be redeemed. Contending can move toward resolve even before you're dead. Contending can turn into redemption. It can turn into redemption. We have a story to tell. We are a subplot of a magnificent play that is being written as we speak. And meanwhile, we live these lives. And we want to get traction to see our stories redeemed. And sometimes we spin our wheels. But my friends, like this man, we all have scenes and stories where a snake came into the garden and hurt us badly. It always happens. And no one escapes it. And we try to find ways to deal with that pain that just doesn't work. We simply don't contend well with what happens. But we want to live a better story because we know how the story was written, a redemptive story. And we want to find traction and live a life that says we hope, don't we? That's why I think St. Francis of Assisi said, "Preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words." A few years ago, I read an article. It was about Leon Fleischer. It said, "Miracle of all miracles, they figured out what was wrong with his right hand, and they fixed it." And he was preparing to go on a world tour, touring his new CD called Both Hands. Both Hands. Amazing. One thing I know for sure is that stories don't always end like that. But when they do, it's beautiful and it gives us hope. Eugene Peterson said this: "Every time someone tells a story and tells it well and truly, the gospel is served. Out of the chaos of incident and accident, story-making words bring light, coherence, connection, meaning, and values. If there is a story, then maybe, just maybe, there must be a storyteller." May we be a people who live the story of hope, so this world that needs hope can know without a shadow of a doubt that there is one who wrote the story, who is in charge, and who loves us. Can we pray? Father, it is hard to live this story sometimes, but we know that the story that you wrote has a good ending. And we know the story that you wrote says good words, speaks a good word to people that need hope. We ask that as we live and walk through this world, people will know you because we love. Help us to do that. In the name of Christ, amen.